Today we'll be discussing stage names in Hollywood, and we'll be discussing dyslexia. This is Doctor vs. Comedian. I'm Dr. Asif Doja, and this is the Doctor of Laughs.
Not a real doctor.
Ali Hassan. Every episode, I pick a topic for Ali from comedy to entertainment, and I question him about it. Then Ali picks a topic for medicine and health and grills me on that topic. Today, we'll be discussing the issue of stage names in entertainment, and how in some cases, they may be linked to racism. And we'll be discussing dyslexia.
Racism, laziness, little column A, little column B. You know?
Yes, exactly. And how is dyslexia linked to this entertainment subject? Stay tuned to find out. So, Ali, I want to talk to you about this issue of stage names in Hollywood and in entertainment overall. And this came up because you were telling me about an episode of Smartless, the very famous podcast, where the hosts interviewed Keanu Reeves. What was this about?
Yeah, and in fact, it's interesting that we're talking about the idea of changing your name, because in fact, it was an interview with Keanu Reeves, who did not change his name, but he was asked to. And I was just shocked to hear about that even the name Keanu was just far too ethnic when he started performing. And as we said, it's like sometimes it's laziness and sometimes it's definitely racism. You know, for me, it's deeply unfortunate that that would happen. Now, he's born in the mid-60s and he started acting in the 80s. But, you know, Keanu is a Hawaiian name. He's born in Beirut. His father is Hawaiian, Chinese, English, Irish, Portuguese, like a real mix of different backgrounds. And, you know, he's this incredible product of all these different cultures. And it's like, I don't know, I take a deep offense to that, where it's like, change your name. We don't like how you reflect all these cultures. Times have changed. Times are changing. But I did love the idea that, you know, as much as an, I don't want to say desperate, but as ambitious as he was to be an actor, he was also like, no, I'm not going to change my name. You know, it's just funny that the guys on Smartless, like, what? They wanted you to change your name? But if somebody was like named Mahershala, they might be like, yeah, you should probably change your name, right?
Yeah. And what advice would they have given him in the 80s if they were friends with him,
yeah,
right? Like, it is a bit of a factor in the time that these people came up. And I think we'll get to that in a few minutes. But I had a question for you, Ali. Did you ever consider changing your name for like the comedy stage?
I did. And I think you know the answer to that because you've read my book and I talk about it in the book. But yeah, like quite seriously after 9/11, I just kind of wanted to change my name, period. It was not just for the stage, but even I was a caterer and, you know, I was making very, very exciting food in my own not so humble opinion, I guess. And I looked at my name on paper or on my business card and I was like, I don't know. I don't know what people think when they see this name, but I can't help but think it takes them out of the thoughts of like just a guy making really tasty, creative dishes. And so I was looking into it and I was like, okay, what if it's like Al Hassan, but then you still have the Hassan. But my, you know, that wasn't too much of a stretch because friends still called me, a lot of friends called me Al. Some of my friends' parents would call me Al. So that wasn't too much of a stretch. But then I'm like, no, but the Hassan is still there. And, you know, this, let's go back to the time where, you know, on the FBI.gov most wanted list, there was like 7 different variations of Hassan, Hassan, Hossein, Hassanain, you know? So then I was like, what about Hansen, Ali Hansen or Al Hansen, you know? And I was really thinking about this. I was like, I don't know. I think this would be a good thing for me. And
you could have been one of the Hansen.
I could have been
brothers.
One of the Hansen brothers. Bumba. That's what that's exactly. I wanted to ride the coattails of these blonde brothers, the forgotten Hansen.
Just like you.
The forgotten Hansen, for good reason. And then my friend Aslam, our good friend, may he rest in peace, our good buddy had said to me, he goes, dude, the only thing worse than being Ali Hassan is being the guy formerly known as Ali Hassan. because he goes, all of these people, because you're more concerned about at the border and this kind of stuff, they all know what your name used to be. It's not like you wipe the hard drive completely of your past. So they're going to be like, okay, this guy changed his name. What does he have to hide? So you're just going to get into more trouble at the border. And I was like, oh, okay. That seems like wise advice. And then that was it. I didn't entertain it again after that. But it's, yeah, my name has been a constant, you know, it's three letters and yet it's still been like, you know, six, seven different pronunciations. And yeah, part of me as a guy who, you know, doesn't want to make people feel uncomfortable is like, well, yeah, just pronounce it however you want. Ali, Ali, mm-hmm, Ali, mm-hmm. You know, but I have a lot of respect for what is happening right now. And I, you know, and when we talk about it being racism, it's like, you know, there's like seven different ways of pronouncing Kirsten, right? Kirsten, actually, it's Kirstine. And like this guy, we've all dealt with like these names where people are very particular about what it's pronounced. So why shouldn't that be the same case with whoever the person is, whatever their name is? And of course, it's Ali talking to Asif right now. So we are the least credible people talking about this subject. And we have spoken about this before in on our podcast, but you know, the Keanu Reeves thing where he didn't change his name made me think of a friend of mine who's an actor out of Toronto. His name is Fouad. And Fouad has a great article on CBC Arts. We'll link to that article. He, in 2006, he started acting. And as you know, as diverse as we think Toronto is, he got the advice immediately that he should change his name. His name is Fouad Ahmed. And no one could pronounce it in casting rooms, and you know, directors and producers really weren't, you know, it was like a, you know, it's similar to the accent. The accent sometimes provides this barrier between connecting with somebody if you are the type of person who's not willing to see past those things. And the name does the same thing. And people are like, oh, I can't have a friend named Fouad. I don't even know how to pronounce it. I don't even know what that is, that kind of thing, right? So really it is about all of those things, laziness, racism, and a lack of knowledge about other people and other cultures. And the laziness comes in because people don't want to learn. They're like, yeah, I'm not going to get into it, right? He became Gabe Gray for many years, for 15 years. And just recently, over the last couple of years, he just said, I'm going to take my name back. It's an Arabic name. It means heart. It's pronounced Fouad. It's four letters. I have to go through hoops to pronounce other people's names. I want the same respect given to me. And, you know, he went down through this whole thing about, oh, you should be clean shaven. Otherwise, you look terroristy. You should do this, or you're not really wanted for the romantic leads. And so he has changed his name back to Fouad, and he just got a romantic lead in a Christmas movie that's coming out in the next few months. So I'm very, very happy about it. Oh, yeah.
That's good. Maybe you could be in that too.
For various reasons, I don't think I'm the right guy for that. My problem is mostly weight. I'm going to go and say, if I could, you know, romantic leads, they're not usually the chubbos.
Well, I meant you could have been like his best friend or his dad.
His
best
friend, his dad. Anyway. There you go. There you go. I thought you were making fun and saying I should be a romantic.
Well, you could too.
No, that should be you making fun. That's a whole other thing. But you know, he says in this article, you know, he was looking at Mahershala Ali winning an Oscar in 2016, 2018. Riz Ahmed nominated for Best Actor 2020. Rami Youssef, Hamza Haq wins a Canadian Screen Award for best lead actor. He's in the show Transplant. He's the lead in Transplant. Oh, yeah. So he's watching all these people. And I think there was a part of him who's like, why did I do this? Why did I change this? But I, you know, when you're at the time, you want to get into this business and you want acceptance from the people around you and you don't like people, you're sort of making those faces around you when they hear your name. And I understand why people are inclined to do it. And I empathize, but I have a lot of respect for people who don't change their name and push through. Not everybody has that luxury to do it, but we will talk about one guy who is like a hero to both of us, actually.
Okay, well, let's get to that in a minute. So there's different ways we can look at this. So some people in the entertainment business in Hollywood will just use their middle names for, you know, which I don't even know. I guess we could talk about it. So Meghan Markle is actually Rachel Meghan Markle. Why you wouldn't go with Rachel? That seems like a fine name. I don't know. And then there's your good friend Drake. Oh, he was in a movie with Drake. Now, literally, he was in a movie that Drake was also in.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Breakaway, also called Speedy Sings, depending on what part of the world that you're in. So Drake was in that movie in one scene. Anyway, so Drake's real name is Aubrey Drake Graham. So he just goes by his middle name. So that's, and then Brad Pitt's first name is William, but he goes by Brad
Willie Pitt.
Pitt?
Wouldn't you have been as impressed by Willie Pitt? Maybe not.
Maybe not. I don't find this that unique because I also go by my middle name. So Asif's not my actual first name. My first name is Muhammad. I don't go by that. And you might say, oh, you don't go by Muhammad for the same reason Ali does. You don't want to be stopped at the border. Well, first of all, it's my name on my passport and birth certificate, so I still get stopped at the border despite me using it. But it's just because Muhammad is actually the first name of everyone in my family. So I'm like Muhammad Doja the third or fourth, except I'm not pretentious and I don't go by that. I also don't go by Junior either. Mo Junior. So instead I just go by my
Mo Doge would have been good. Mo Doge, I could have flown off that. Anyways.
It's certainly something. Anyway, I don't find it that unique. So let's put aside those middle name people.
It's like a tiny stretch. That's just something like it's a little bit more appealing to the ear maybe than their first name.
I could have done the first initial, you know, like F. Scott Fitzgerald. I could have done M. Asif Doja. Sometimes I'll write that. But, you know, once I started, you know, publishing scientific papers and I didn't put the M, like you can't go back. Because that's how you get them. So just had to go and move forward. Anyway. So, yeah. Okay. Middle names. That's a separate thing.
What is particularly interesting is a completely made up name. And obviously, you know, in music, that's very common. You know, when you're a rapper or something, obviously, you're typically going to go by some sort of rap performance, right? MC Doge, you're going to go by Doja Cat, for example, Lady Gaga, The Weeknd, right? These people who, like, it's like all about having a cool name because music is cool. But what comes to mind immediately, and it's not because it's cool, is Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I found out that that's A, not his real name, and B, he voluntarily changed it to that.
Yeah, I held that man in high regard because I was like, good for you, man. Don't change your name. Make it despite all the odds stacked against you with that ridiculous name. And he chose it. He chose it. His real name. What is his real name? It's not even that bad. It's Arnold George Dorsey. Arnie Dorsey. Georgie Dorsey. G-Dose. He's like kind of like you. He's a Doge.
Yeah.
I don't know. A.G. Dorsey. Look, anything is better than Engelbert Humperdinck. Any combination of anything you can do with Arnold George and Dorsey is great. I can't believe it. I just can't believe he did that on purpose.
I think he changed it just because they thought it would be more like eye-catching, and I don't really know.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's still good for him in a way. He's just like, I'll make people's lives more difficult.
By the way, when Ali showed me this link to his Wikipedia page, this is honestly what it's written on his Wikipedia page. Engelbert Humperdinck has been described as one of the finest middle-of-the-road balladeers around.
I tell you. A little too honest. Okay. A little too honest. Yeah. By the way, Arnie George Dorsey, born in Madras, India.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Various sources say he has Anglo-Indian heritage. That is neither here nor there. Once you go Engelbert, you can't go back.
But let's talk about culture and embracing culture, because there are people who tried to actually embrace their culture by changing their name. So one example is Erykah Badu, the singer. Her name is Erica Wright. And so she wanted to change it to, you know, kind of reflect more of her heritage. But then there's other people who are trying to basically co-opt, you know, try to make their names sound more black, essentially, when they're not. So this is the example for that is Calvin Harris. So Calvin Harris is a white guy. Know him. He used to date Taylor Swift.
We know him as hilarious. Yes.
He's like a DJ music maker, right? And his name is Adam Wiles. So a pretty white name. So he said he picked Calvin Harris to be more racially ambiguous so people wouldn't know if he was black or not. And I'm like, I don't think you should be admitting that in public there, buddy. That's pretty, I don't know.
But with racism looming as large as it does in society, maybe he'd be turned down for things because he sounds black as well.
That's true.
So maybe it's like,
that's true.
I want to be, I don't think that's why he did it. Racially ambiguous suggests that he wanted work for white and black people.
That's right.
There's another story of a guy who changed his name for also for reasons that I don't know if I love this dude, but I don't know if I respect this too much in retrospect. Jamie Foxx, he told Letterman in 2015, he changed his name to Jamie Foxx. His real name is Eric Marlon Bishop, which, to be honest, Eric Bishop is like a great performer's name. Marlon name, Bishop's yeah. a great name. He said that he noticed that like 1,000 guys would show up and only 3 women would show up for stand-up comedy, and all 3 women would get the spot and none of the men would. So he went to the list and he wrote down.
I don't know if none of the men, but I would say still majority of them.
Did I just say none of the men? I'm sorry. There was 1,000 guys vying for 7 spots, and there was 3 women vying for 3 spots is what he.
Yeah, and they want to make it least representative.
Yes. And also by 1,000, he meant 50. But anyway, yes, he went to the list. He wrote down a unisex name, Jamie Foxx. So, I mean, on the one hand, how, you know, resourceful and creative. On the other hand, like, you know, out of respect for female comedians who were not getting enough stage time as it was. And I teach a class on stand-up comedy. I'm well-versed in some of the discrimination against women from, you know, dating back to Johnny Carson and the bookers for Johnny Carson. I mean, it was very difficult for women to get stage time. And it's a tradition that, you know, continued to stand and still stands in many places 50 years later. So I believe that Jamie Foxx should have used his inside voice on that as well. I don't think he should have been vocal about why he went with that name.
Fair enough. There are some examples of people who, it wasn't their choice, right? They were told, you have to change your name. And one of my favorite recording artists is John Mellencamp. Now we call him John Mellencamp, but that's not who he was when he first signed to MCA Records. They basically said, you're not using the name John Mellencamp. You need to use something cooler, hipper, that the kids today will love. So they changed it to Johnny Cougar. And that's what his first album came
something
out as.
Something hot and wild.
Then he morphed to John Cougar. Then they morphed to John Cougar Mellencamp. Yeah. And then finally, he was eventually able to dump
Talk
them.
About like really spoon-feeding the American audiences, huh? I'm Johnny Cougar. Now I'm Johnny with just one N, huh?
Exactly. There's also an interesting situation of people who are trying to not be associated with their famous name. So the classic example is Nicolas Cage, right? He chose the last name Cage because he named it after Luke Cage, Power Man, Marvel superhero.
Yeah, and actually we have an episode on Nepo Babies from a few months back. Yeah. We never discussed that. Nicolas Cage is the anti-Nepo baby. He's like, I will not allow Nepo. And that's hurt his career in a couple of different instances.
No, I mean, his last name is Coppola, right? And so he is related to the Coppola family. So, you know, he decided to not do that. I think Nicolas Cage is doing just as well as Nicolas Cage should be doing.
You're absolutely right. Very tactful, although I'm quite a fan of a number of his films. But yeah, that's very tactful, what you just said. Good for you. There's another huge category of people who are trying to sound less ethnic. And that's why I started with talking about my friend Fuad, who was told to sound. So we don't always know the reason for why people go in this direction. I assume, you know, career motivated. Sometimes it might be somebody else who tells you. But the first guy I'm going to mention, I bring him up because we went to see an epic film with him in it and you fell asleep, Asif. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, yes. Ben Kingsley.
You got it, buddy. We went to see Gandhi and little Asif couldn't handle a 3.5-hour movie at age 7. I don't know. It was totally reasonable that you fell asleep. Plus, it's Gandhi, for God's sake. What the hell is a 7-year-old doing there anyway? Real name, Krishna Pandit Bhanji. Stage name, Ben Kingsley. He was born to Russian, Jewish, and Indian parents. Clearly, the Russian Jewish side had no impact on his name, Krishna Pandit Bhanji. That is very Indian. He changed his name when he became an actor with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And actually, Kingsley's father suggested it when he thought his son might need a more British name to succeed in the theater. So that's interesting too. Like your own parents are sometimes like, rather than encouraging you to not be in the theater, like, no, you be in the theater, but you cannot sound like yourself.
And, you know, Ben Kingsley, though, that was a long time ago, right, that he got into acting. And so that seems a bit more understandable than some of the more recent people, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unfair.
I don't know if Krishna Pandit Bhanji is going to succeed in certain circles to this day, like today even.
Yeah, well, let's get it. We'll talk about some people who haven't changed their name in a second. I mean, back then, if that was your name, you would have only gotten like Indian roles. And of course, he did, of course, Gandhi, but he's had a million other roles that, you know, they're not specifically written for an Indian or South Asian person, right?
Yeah.
Well, because you could move forward then to Cal Penn, right? Who's, we did a whole episode on Cal Penn, and you guys can listen to it. But his first name is actually Cal Penn, and then Suresh is his middle name, and Modi is his last name.
I give him respect for keeping the Modi out of the entire name. Nobody needs that name floating around unless they absolutely have to right now. Complete trash. But yeah, so Cal Penn became Cal Penn.
And, you know, I mean, he talks about this in his book. We talk about it in our podcast episode from earlier on this year. Like, you know, he had to do this. Like, this was the advice everyone, he was not getting any auditions when he used his regular name. He had to switch.
Yeah. I mean, you can see that as well. I mean, even Cal Penn, I'm sure people struggled with, like, I don't recognize the name.
At least they couldn't tell what it was till you came in the interview room. But, you know, otherwise you could just scratch people off beforehand.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, it's no different from, you know, resumes. And in a resume, if you think of that, the old days of like a pile of, let's say, 30 resumes on somebody's desk, and they look at a name and it's like, oh my gosh, what is this? How many syllables? I don't know how to pronounce this. You know what? I'm just not going to make this phone call, regardless of their references, whatever it is. I'm not going to, I got to go look at Stuart Jones. Yep. Here we go, right? So you just gravitate.
There have been studies looking at this where you submit resumes to companies as part of a study where you have a name that's clearly associated with a certain race, in other words, that are racially ambiguous, and you see who gets interviews, certainly, and who gets called back, and certainly people who have more Black-sounding names not invited back for interviews as much.
And of course, the plot thickens once you do answer the phone, and that's when, you know, this phenomenon of code switching happens. Did we do an episode on code switching?
We did a lot of episodes.
This is great.
We did do an episode of code switching about how people change their vernacular, the way they speak, depending on who they're talking to. And so, yeah, that's another great example. And I mean, just to finish off with the brown examples of South Asian people, Mindy Kaling is another.
Yeah. Her real name, Veera Mindy Chokalingam. I'm not struggling with that one personally.
With a change, like you understand why she changed.
No, I'm not struggling with her name. Veera is great. Mindy is great. Chokalingam is not that hard to say. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not struggling with the reason she changed it either.
Yeah, I think it's the same as Cal Penn. You look at Mindy Kaling, what is that? I don't know. Like, now you know what she looks like because she's famous, but you didn't know that beforehand. So it's interesting. And again, we could talk about other groups as well. So Jewish people, John Stewart, his name is John Stewart, is his middle name, Leibowitz.
Oh, yeah.
So he changed that to be less ethnic, less Jewish. Ralph Lauren. Do you know Ralph Lauren's last name?
It's not a good Lifshitz.
So you're like, okay, I understand why you switched that. That may actually have nothing to do with ethnicity. Just he's trying to sell clothes. Yeah. So it's like, maybe I should switch it. And then a couple other ones. So Chloe Bennett, she is an actress who's on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for several years. And her name is Chloe Wang. And was born Chloe Wang. And she changed it to Chloe Bennett. Because again, they see Wang, they immediately typecast her. And then we'll link to some articles about her. She got a lot of backlash for changing her name. But it's like, well, it's like you can't win.
I know.
Right?
And this is the thing. This is why I'm trying not to disparage anyone for their choices. Because in The Guardian, there was an article. Arwa Madawi wrote this article. Chloe Bennett was right to call out Hollywood racism, but wrong to change her name. I mean, it's such a bold claim to say that nobody's living in Chloe Bennett's shoes and understanding what the struggle is for Chloe Bennett in particular, right? So my hope was to just really talk about the forces at work that make you either inspire you or oblige you to change your name.
And I'm sure it's different over time. Like, we talked a lot about South Asian people, but, you know, if you look even earlier, it was Hispanic sounding names, right? Still can be an issue. So Martin Sheen is probably the biggest example. His name is Ramon Antonio Gerardo Estevez. I had no idea that was his name.
That's Martin Sheen. That's the dad.
Martin Sheen. And so this is why. So he changed it because, again, like, how often, I can't even remember the last time Martin Sheen was cast as a Hispanic person, even though he is Hispanic, right?
And you mean so, Martin Ramon Antonio Gerardo Estevez? That is super Latino.
Yeah. And so, of course, that's why his sons, Emilio Estevez, goes by the Estevez name, but Charlie Sheen elected to go by the Sheen name. You can debate who's more famous than the other. I think
one's famous and one's infamous. I mean, that's a hard one to, that's a tough debate.
It's true. And then, of course, there's Oscar Isaac. I didn't understand this either, because Oscar Isaac plays a lot of Hispanic characters. I'm like, why does he get to play Hispanic? I'm like, oh, Oscar Estrada is his name. And I don't think Estrada is that, like, that's a bit strange. Like, you didn't want to pick Estrada?
Well, you could have piggybacked on the success 30 years ago of Eric Estrada, hot superstar. True.
More than 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, anyway. God, I just want to say 30 years ago when something is a long time ago. I just like to say 30. But it's, you know, I understand that, too, because with Oscar Isaac, you're open to more roles. And, right, and again, exactly. It's a lot about on paper. What does somebody see on paper? Estrada, we're not really looking for a Latino guy. But you see Oscar Isaac, you don't think that. And then you see them and you're like, oh, this guy could play a bunch of different roles. Now the options are there because you've seen their face. So it's all about, you know, acting is about getting in the door. It's about getting in the door, getting your face seen. So much of it is that. And so, yeah, it's like you have to kind of, it's very hard to be a pioneer in this regard. You know, you're not, your name, you can lose a lot of work trying to be a person who's like, I am sticking with this name and that's all there is to it. And the rest of you can suck it if you don't like it, right?
And we can certainly talk about people, we'll talk about people who refuse to change their names, but there are a few, there's a handful of people whose names sound fake and made up, but they're not, right? So the ones like that, people who just use their first name, but this is their true first name. So Madonna, Zendaya, Beyonce, right? We all know that they have last names, but those are their true first names. So that's interesting. And the one I had no idea about is Dua Lipa, right? Dua Lipa, she has, it's a Muslim name, and that's her name. I thought it was a stage name.
I did not know that. That's wild. Okay.
And so, okay, let's get to what you really want to talk about. Ali, you said we have some heroes who are people who just have refused to change their name. And so we can go, kind of go through a couple of examples of each, or people who really just said, no, we're sticking with this, and you just learn how to pronounce my name.
Okay, I'm going to start with, it's like a group of people. I'm going to start in order of how impressed I am with them, basically. Number one, Michael Peña. So Michael Peña, you might think like, well, it's not so difficult a name, but he saw other actors, presumably Latinos and non-Latinos, getting commercial roles after they changed their names. And he was like, man, that's a slap in the face. Like, he's dealt with so much racism as a kid, and then changing his name would be like conforming and accepting all the racism and justifying all that racism. So Michael Peña stayed Peña and taught a generation of people how to pronounce that N, the squiggle, huh?
Peña. Mm-hmm. Squiggle, yeah, yeah. The OG for that, in terms of Latino people not changing their names, is Andy Garcia. You know, Andy Garcia, I think, is in his 60s now. And he's, when he got to Hollywood, he says that Latino actors were pigeonholed into very stereotypical roles. And again, people said, change your name, change your name. And he's like, nope, I'm keeping it. I'm keeping it Garcia. And again, he's another guy. Certainly, he has played Hispanic characters, but he's played lots of different characters as well. So he's a great example of somebody who stuck to his guns way back in the day.
Totally. Kuvenzhané Wallace. Is it Kuvenzhané or Kuvenzhané? Mm-hmm.
I think you said it right the first
Kuvenzhané
time.
Kuvenzhané Wallace from Annie. Annie will never change her name. That's what she was born with. There's an Irish performer many of us will know. How do you pronounce it?
You don't know how to pronounce her name.
Oh my God.
So we have it on our Google Doc here. It's Saoirse.
That's right. That's right.
Saoirse. It sounds like inertia. That's how I remember her.
Nobody gave me the trick. Saoirse said she considered changing her name as a child and then just was like, you know what? People have to come around to this. They're just going to have to learn how to pronounce it, including Ali Hassan, who forgot how it was pronounced for a second.
There we go. You didn't get that. What about, and then there's some people with African names, so African origin names. So I'm thinking of Chiwetel Ejiofor, Lupita Nyong'o. Like, they're just like, this is it. Learn how to pronounce it.
Yeah,
right?
And I think in many cases, it's worth saying that you have to work so much harder. You have to work so much harder to sort of be undeniable. So people are like, oh, Christ, okay, I guess I got to book this person. You know what I mean? And I think It's not a bad thing for that actor to work that hard and be undeniable, but it's a shame that they have to when you probably have a lot of mediocre actors who get work over them, especially when they're starting up. Certainly not when they're, you know, leads and have big films behind them. And I'll wrap up this category with two of my favorite brown people right now. One of them is Maitreyi Ramakrishnan, who is the lead on Never Have I Ever. Four seasons, fantastic show, has shot this young lady into the stratosphere of acting. She could have gone with Mai. She could have just been Mai Ramakrishnan. She could have been Mai Krishnan or May. But no, she was like, look, if you guys can learn Game of Thrones names, you can learn my Tamil name. And I think that's the bottom line, basically, that it's about interest. People who love Game of Thrones have an interest in knowing how things, in fact, they have an interest in correcting other people. That's not how that dragon is, right? People get into that in a very significant way. So it's like, give me that interest. Give me that baseline respect of asking me how my name is pronounced and then remembering. Mm-hmm. And then my favorite dude, this is just the best. I really like this guy. His name is Utkarsh Ambudkar. And I don't know if you know who Utkarsh is, but I'm certain you've seen him. Pitch Perfect.
He's also on Never Have
I Ever. He was Maitreyi's cousin's teacher boyfriend. Yeah. But people will know him from Pitch Perfect. They'll know him from Ghosts on CBS. He's done a lot of stuff. He's been very, very busy over the last, I'm going to say, 8 years. 2015 is when his career really started to peak. He's a rapper, dancer, performer, and now an actor. And I think he deserves all the, you know, not just accolades, but all the success he's getting. But man, Utkarsh, and I've been around for quite some time. I've heard a lot of Indian names. I've maybe heard 95% of them. This is not in that 95%. I've never heard Utkarsh. I've never heard Ambudkar. I don't know either of those names. So even as a brown person who's well-versed in South Asian names, I have to take a second with that to be like, how would that be pronounced? So that's a tough name. And he didn't care. It's a real middle finger to Hollywood. And that guy, in my opinion, is undeniable. This guy has been doing like somersaults in the theater world. He was in Hamilton. He's been in other Broadway plays and stuff like this. So, man, this dude is like a hero. This is like very significant. I'm sure when Utkarsh meets Cal Penn, he probably shakes his head and is like, dude, come on.
Now, Ollie, let's move on to the medical topic. Would you want to explain to people the connection between our first topic and second topic?
Yes. So my fave, you know, when people go, what would Jesus do? You know that thing? What would Keanu do? That's my thing. I love this man so much. If you look up Keanu, you'll see who this dude really is. Like, really an impressive person. And I mean that because of who he is, despite adversity that he has faced. His child was born at 8 months, stillborn. And then his partner with who we had the child with, she died in a car collision, I think a year or two after that. He's dealt with a lot of adversity and he is, from all accounts, a very grounded, down-to-earth person. He's an introvert. Everybody says very, very sweet. You see who he donates to, how much money he gives to charity. I'm really impressed by this guy. And on top of all the rest of it, he has dyslexia. Now, I don't know if it's a had, I don't know if it's a has, but therein lie some of my questions. Is this something that can be curable? Mm-hmm. How is it cured? But first of all, let's talk about what dyslexia is. And first of all, why don't we say it together? I'm going to ask, do we know what causes it? And why don't we say it together, Asif? We don't know.
That's
not exactly choreographed, but good for you.
Well, let's clarify some things with dyslexia. So basically, dyslexia is this difficulty with reading, and it's actually a difficulty with decoding. That's a better way of saying it. How do you decode the printed word to understand that that is representing words and then comprehending that? And it has to be, you have to take aside, you know, the intelligence, your ability to understand things. So it's kind of irrespective of IQ and irrespective of sensory abilities. Obviously, if you can't see, if you have visual impairment, then that will impair your ability to see it. So those things are intact. So children with dyslexia, we often call it developmental dyslexia because it is occurs more in kids, and as you get older, you can overcome it. So that's, and who knows where Keanu Reeves is on that scale right now. But children with dyslexia have difficulty recognizing printed words and have difficulty in sounding out unfamiliar words and then have to read slowly. The whole thing about getting things mixed up, you know, we talk about the D is actually a B, or the word was, but it was actually saw, and you kind of reverse things. That does happen, but it's not like you look at a page and everything is kind of mixed up. It's more the difficulty with decoding what's on the page. And so you may make errors in that decoding.
All right. How common is it? How many people have dyslexia in society?
Right. Okay. So again, to answer that question, we have to take a step back. There are some disorders that we see in medicine that are what we call categorical. Either you have it or you do not have it, right? Mm-hmm. So
no gray area.
Yeah. Cystic fibrosis is a genetic disease of the lungs. Either you have it or you don't have it. Okay. So it's easy. But others are what we call continuous, right? So a good example is blood pressure or weight, right? There is a range of healthy weights, and then we have these different cutoffs, which we can talk about in a future episode about obesity and what constitutes that. But with hypertension, we just did an episode a few weeks ago on hypertension, right? There is a cutoff where now suddenly you would classify someone as being hypertensive, where if your blood pressure is below that. So dyslexia, by definition, you need an arbitrary cutoff to say that now you're falling into a category where it's not just, oh, I have a bit of difficulty with decoding some words or pronouncing things. And by the way, you guys have a good example of somebody on this podcast who has difficulty sometimes pronouncing things because I get a lot of these names wrong. So, and we talked about how I've gotten some names of certain things wrong, or Ali will correct me. Today, I did pretty good with Saoirse Ronan.
Pretty well.
So there is a problem with that. Now you might say, well, if I have a problem with that, why did I choose to do a podcast? Who knows?
Or why? Go into medicine for that matter.
That's brave. Yeah, anyway. So there's many reasons for that. So I don't think that I would fall into this cutoff, because the cutoff is when we look at a scale, let's think of a bell curve, right? And you have the scores of how people would do on, say, a test that tests for dyslexia, right? And that's how we would test for it, by doing not just IQ tests, because you want to look at that IQ, but you want to look at other things as well. So their ability to kind of understand words and essentially decode the written language in whatever their primary language is. So you can do tests for that. If you're 1.5 standard deviations below the mean, okay, so if you take the mean of a bell curve, is say the middle of a bell curve for something that's, say, normally distributed, and then if you go to the one side, the people who are in the very bottom would be considered the 1.5 standard deviations away from the mean. So that is the cutoff that we use. You can use different cutoffs, but that's what they kind of arbitrarily picked. So if that's the case, then you give everybody this assessment, right? What proportion of the population would be 1.5 standard deviations below the mean? It's about 7%. So by using this cutoff, we would say 7% approximately of the population would be classified as having dyslexia, which is huge.
I have a question. Right? It's pretty big. This might be a very smart question. It might be a very dumb question. I'm going to go with smart. You said 7%. You're saying the population. Is that a global thing, or is it more prevalent in North America? Do certain cultures, do certain whatever, alphabets, do certain, you know, societies deal less with dyslexia? And if so, how?
It is noted universally amongst all cultures. So that's a very good question. But the severity of the reading problems depends on the language, okay? So I'll give you a couple of examples. Italian and Finnish, I don't know how to speak either of those.
What?
But apparently, and listen, I should have given this caveat at the beginning. I'm not a linguist, for sure. I'm not a speech therapist, and I'm not a psychologist. All those people would have more knowledge about this than me as a neurologist. So let's just start with that. In neurology, we have to be aware of this disorder, but we don't commonly see it or diagnose it or treat it. Okay. So Italian and Finnish, there is a more consistent mapping between letters and the sounds they make. Okay. So because of that, it's actually more obvious when you're reading, say, something in Italian, how you would pronounce the word. Whereas there are some languages, and one of the worst ones is English.
Yeah. When you're an native English speaker, you're like, this has got to be one of the easiest languages.
But it's ridiculous. So let's look at the word attention. It should be attention.
Attention.
Why is T-I-O-N pronounced shun? right? These are all the rules we have to learn and the phonics that we have to learn when we're learning how to read. Now it's secondary to us because Ali and I grew up speaking English. So the reading problems can be more severe in less consistent languages, which English would be one of them. So very good question. We didn't plan that one, guys.
You don't have to pull back the curtain and tell people exactly how smart my questions are, but yeah. So you haven't talked about what caused it yet. Like, do we know the answer to that?
We don't know the answer. So we think there is a genetic basis to it. It does tend to run in families, but it becomes a bit complicated, right? So is it that it runs in families, but then maybe the parents then, if they have it, don't encourage reading for their kids because they are not that good at reading. So there is still this combination between genetics and environment, as in all cases. Interestingly, it does occur more often in boys than girls, but interestingly, boys come to attention more than girls. So girls can kind of slip under the radar. And that's because boys have a high rate of certain comorbidities. So comorbidities is a word which means other diseases or disorders that are associated.
The pandemic familiarized us with the word comorbidity.
Exactly. Yeah. That's so true. So boys have externalizing disorders. So externalizing disorders are like behavior disorders, sometimes disruptive behavior disorders. So the classic one is ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And boys who have ADHD, we talked about this in a previous episode a few years ago, they will have more externalizing behavior. So being hyperactive, disrupting in the class, girls with ADHD will be more inattentive. So they can fly under the radar if they're just daydreaming in class, right? So ADHD can be seen with this as well. Another comorbidity that you can see is language impairment. So that is, language impairment is language delay, right? So kids who aren't speaking at the appropriate time or who have immature phrasing, that could be because of a language impairment. But then you can also have speech sound disorder where you have difficulties in articulation, which Ali will certainly say that.
You do.
Okay, thank you.
You said certainly, and I am certain, and so are our listeners.
Yeah, we also didn't plan that. So there is no gene to test for, but we know that genetics plays a role. We also know that by doing MRI studies, you can see abnormalities in the MRIs, not just with a typical MRI, but when you're doing these research MRIs. Basically, you would expect when someone's reading, you would expect activation of the areas associated with language processing, which are mainly in the left hemisphere. And we see these areas have abnormal activation patterns in patients with dyslexia. We can also look at the white matter connections. So the way when you think about a brain is the gray matter is our neurons where our thinking occurs. I'm like, okay, I want to move my arm. I want to talk. But then it has to be connected all the way down to the different parts of the brain and then eventually down to your spinal cord. And the way it connects is through what's called white matter. So gray matter is the neurons of the brain, you know, your thinking movement, but how they're connecting is white matter. So there are also white matter changes that we've seen in these connections in patients with dyslexia, again, mainly on the left part of the brain. So we do know that there's brain changes. We do know that genetics has to play a role, but environment also plays a role as well.
If somebody suspects dyslexia in their child, what's the course of action there?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is speak with your family doctor or pediatrician. So if you suspect an issue with learning, so I would say anybody who is not performing well at school, I'm just taking a step back away from dyslexia. So not performing well at school, you need to think about what could be the cause, right? So there could be something like anxiety or depression. Maybe that's, you know, contributing to the problem at school. Maybe it's ADHD, or maybe it's a learning disorder. So a learning disorder, learning disability, we use all these terms interchangeably. Dyslexia is one example of this, or also called learning impairment, but there's many other kinds as well. So you want to be tested for this. And usually what we recommend is what's called a psychoeducational assessment. There's a bit more sophisticated test called a neuropsychological assessment, but we'll just kind of use those interchangeably now, even though they're not the same. And this is basically you see a psychologist and they do a battery of tests. So they do IQ testing, they do visual spatial testing, they do kind of ordering and numbering testing, and they look at all these things. And based on how you do on this testing, they compare you to norms for your age. And for dyslexia, there's a bit of a debate in the scientific literature about whether you should compare people to other people with the same IQ or other people with the same age. But either of those is kind of fine to make a diagnosis of dyslexia. So again, if you're following 1.5 standard deviations, you respect your ability to decode words, right? Then you'd be considered to have dyslexia. So seeing a psychologist would help to look at all these things, not just dyslexia. It can look at other learning impairments as well, and IQ, et cetera. So that's what we would suggest if you are suspecting this in your child or in yourself.
And then what are the varieties of treatments that kids can go through?
Well, in general, you need to have treatment by someone who is trained in the treatment of dyslexia. That's the first thing.
There's no medicine, right? Again, possibly correct. Stupid, sorry, possibly smart absolutely. Question, but there's no...
No, very good question.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, you want to give people education and training in how to basically decode these words. And that's basically phonics. So I know we make a joke about hooked on phonics, and maybe your kids, Ollie, when they were learning to read, they use these phonics books. But that's basically what you have to do to emphasize phonics, awareness of sounds and how they're created in the language that you're learning in. For us, we were talking about English, and how you connect text, how you develop strategies about comprehension and reading comprehension. And of course, they also work on oral language skills, because improving your oral language will reinforce what you're learning in terms of decoding the written word. So that's basically what they do. So if you found someone, whether they're a speech therapist, psychologist, someone who has some training in this and how to address dyslexia, special education teachers, particularly at school, have expertise in this. So again, it's not something that's necessarily done by a physician. There's no medicine, but there is a way to address it if you see that. A lot of these kids will then at school have an individual education program or an individual education plan specific for them. Sometimes it gives them more time on tests. Sometimes they write tests in a room where there's less distractions, so they have time to kind of do this decoding. But that can be put in place by the specialist who you see.
Okay.
So that's our show for today. Let us know what you guys thought about this issue of stage names, any examples that we forgot, and of course, let us know about dyslexia. Any other things you want us to talk about in that realm of learning impairments, learning disorders, happy to discuss on a future episode of the podcast, drvcomedian@gmail.com, drvcomedian on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are everywhere. Ali, anything to plug for the month of July?
StandUpAli.com is the website, and you can see a variety of things that I have coming up, including in August going to the Okanagan for the Okanagan Comedy Festival. And then in the fall, we start Run the Burbs. We're just looking at scheduling for Run the Burbs Season 3. Keep trucking along.
Lots of stuff going on. Remember, though, that although I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. Medical issues we talk about are for your interest and information only, and they're not medical advice. Please consult your medical professionals for actual medical advice. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thank you.